Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, joined, as always, by our super producer, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
Jason, we have lots of exciting stuff to get to. Plenty of exciting stuff to get to. More, a plethora of exciting stuff to get to.
I don't know what you're talking about.
There's so much excitement. I was concerned for the internet. I thought the internet might break yesterday.
No.
Between Lonnie Chisenhall's game and Gregory Polanco's promotion, I was pretty sure the internet was just going to collapse.
It managed.
That was how our planet ends, actually. It just all collapsed upon itself from the Twitter ruckus caused by the Indians and Pirates yesterday. However, that did not happen, so we're here today to talk about it. Prior to getting to that, though, Jason, we have to bring this up because it's been a while since we pod. You know, it's been a little over a week. I think we went 10 days or so-ish, maybe?
Like that?
Something like that. So, in between then and now, your Cleveland Browns quarterback, Jonathan Manziel, I don't know if his name's actually Jonathan, but he was drafted in the 28th round by the San Diego Padres. Jason, what do you think about NFL quarterback Johnny Manziel being drafted by the Padres in the 28th round?
Oh, I just thought about it the most I've ever thought about it.
Literally right now.
I don't care. Russell Wilson was drafted.
And he was, and I was just, that was my
drafted too.
That was my point that I was about to bring up. Well, Elway was a pretty good baseball player though, wasn't he? So he was wasn't he actually considering playing baseball professionally unless some draft stuff went his way or whatever?
I mean, wasn't Russell Wilson a good baseball player?
I don't think Russell Wilson was ever that good where he ever thought, you know, like, maybe I could play baseball or be a Super Bowl winning quarterback. I don't know which. I think Russell Wilson's always pretty much been football.
But why are they drafting them then?
Well, I think we both know why, and I think we're both going to be on the same page as this. Because when I wrote this down on the agenda, I immediately thought Jason and I would think about the same thing on this one. But go ahead. What do you think? Why do you think they're drafting them?
I think it's because they're actually decent baseball players. Oh, look, ESPN Dallas. Russell Wilson's baseball career wasn't a joke. That's the headline. I mean, they're not going to – I mean, they got good arms and whatever.
And so you think they're legitimately drafting them based on their baseball skills? Legitimately?
Here's the question. They took him in the 28th round. Is that correct?
Yes.
I bet that Johnny Manziel has pretty much the same shot at making a major league roster as Nathan Winfrey, a third baseman out of Maplewood Community College in Missouri, that the Indians.
I mean, that is a very valid point.
These guys at the end, I mean, yeah, like Cody Allen was drafted. I think it was in the 28th round, but it's just a crapshoot. And they're like, oh, he can throw hard. He's athletic. Maybe.
But here's the thing. You know Johnny Manziel is not playing professional baseball. So what really you do? You know that. You know that.
Why did Russell Wilson go to spring training then?
Why did Russell Wilson go to spring training? I'm going to take your question.
If I was the Seahawks, I wouldn't be very happy about it.
I would not be either. But I think we all know what's happening here, Jason. This is all just a PR move, which I get. You know, the Padres, they got some attention now. You know, the Rangers did the same thing. The Rangers basically said it's a PR move. The Rangers basically said, we know Russell Wilson's not playing professional baseball, but maybe he'll come into camp and talk to some of the kids. And that was what he did. You know, it is what it is, I guess. But I think I read somewhere, I can't remember if it was actually a sports writer, if it was on the Twitterverse, but someone said Johnny Manziel being drafted in the 28th round shows that the Major League Baseball draft is precisely or is should be over after the 27th or something along those lines. And that was what I kind of agreed with.
Yeah, I mean, whatever.
I don't think it's the end of the world or anything, but I feel bad because I know that there's some kid that, like, that was his dream. Some kid coming out of, like, yeah, Manfred Community College in, Boise, Idaho or whatever, who, You know, all he wanted to do his whole life was play professional baseball, and now Johnny Manziel was drafted in a slot instead.
Well, you know what? Johnny Manziel's probably got a better arm than that kid.
Maybe. So, maybe.
I think it's time to come to terms with things.
Oh, the harsh reality of Jason Ruggiero.
I don't know. I don't want to... Maybe I don't want to admit to myself it's a PR move because I find the idea of that disgusting.
You know it's a PR move. It's 100% PR. I find the idea of it being a PR move less disgusting than actually thinking maybe he'll play professional baseball. Nobody in their right mind thinks that.
A PR move? Anything for the sake of a PR move is the utmost of disgusting.
Yeah, I agree. So on that note...
No, wait.
Oh, do you have more you want to talk about?
Well,
I thought the PR move transitioned really well into Pittsburgh and all their ticket sales tonight.
Well, I did say, just ask Neil Huntington, but you kind of talked over it, but don't you think that... This is going to be a transition, though. Don't you think... Okay. This could be a question on the SAT. Johnny Manziel is to Cleveland as Gregory Polanco is to...
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that'd be a good one. We'll have to tweet that one out after we're done recording.
I just think it's funny because, you know, and I don't follow football very much or the Browns especially, but... I think it's funny that, like, I hear these comments from all the Yinzers hating on Johnny Manziel and, like, the hype that surrounds Johnny Manziel. I know that there's more hype because ESPN cares about Johnny Manziel. But, I mean, if you want to – the hype machine is in full gear on both of them.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah. Like, it might not be national hype, but hype around Pittsburgh – you know, with Pittsburgh sports reporters, is at the same level with Polanco as it is in Cleveland with Manziel.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and we'll talk about that a little bit. There are a few exceptions, but yeah, for the most part, generally speaking, Pittsburgh could have been the entire city run on the power of Gregory Polanco tweets last night. If there is some way to harness that energy, we could have powered all of Pittsburgh for a night. So now can we transition? Is that our transition into?
Sure.
Okay. All right. So today we're going to be talking Pirates. Lots of Pittsburgh stuff to catch up on in the week and a half we've been gone. Then we're going to talk Tribe because, quite frankly, yesterday was one of the most exciting days of baseball that I've ever seen, partially because of the lawnmower man. Chiz Whiz, as I affectionately call him.
Chiz Whiz.
We'll give a quick Seawolves shout out, and we'll wrap up with our new segment titled "Step on the Scale." Step on the Scale. I like that. We had no tweet mails today. Dave in Carlisle and Dan in Buffalo are out of commission, so we're on our own today.
They were busy or something.
Yeah, they must have had life happening. All right, so let's start off. We gotta backtrack a little bit because we have, you know, 10 days to go back and cover. Brian Morris, no longer a Pittsburgh Pirate.
Yeah.
In case you missed that, he was traded to the Miami Marlins for the 39th overall pick. So they got a competitive balance pick because baseball lets you trade those, is cool. Yeah, just those ones, just the competitive balance picks. So Brian Morris shipped out of town. The draft was, the draft started last Thursday. So Pittsburgh is already... made their pick with their competitive balance pick. It was the 39th overall, and the Pirates used that selection to select a position player out of the University of San Diego. He's kind of like an outfielder, but I guess he's been playing catcher recently. His name's Connor Joe. So that'll be kind of interesting to see his development, trying to get another young catcher in there. But the grades on him seem fairly solid. So that was pretty... positive season. Yeah. And I mean, there was not a whole lot of backlash from anywhere about the dealing of Brian Morris. I think some people were kind of confused as to, because Morris has been, he's a name that's been around for a while. He was obviously the last remaining piece out of that Jason Bay trade. But if you look at Brian Morris has basically in his major league career been a replacement level player. So you're not giving up much. I mean, the Marlins gave up a lot more. That pick was worth $1.5 million, I think.
Yeah.
Or something along those lines. So overall, it was a great move for Pittsburgh. They have plenty of Brian Morris's in their system. You know, Brian Morris's stuff looked great at the beginning of the year. His velocity was up a tick, and he was throwing that cut fastball. But the results just were never, you know, they just didn't translate this season like we'd hoped. So you weren't giving up much to acquire the 39th overall pick. So, and it won't take Connor Joe much if he becomes major league caliber to outproduce Brian Morris. So good luck and Godspeed in Miami, Brian.
Have fun in that ballpark, that ugly, ugly ballpark.
Oh, it looks like it's – have you seen the bullpens in that ballpark?
Yeah.
They're neon green. It looks like someone's filming a Michael Bay movie in there. It's the ugliest thing I've ever seen in my life. I don't know. I wouldn't be able to pitch in there. I wouldn't be able to concentrate. That neon green would give me a headache.
Everything in that place is ugly.
Yeah. They should film the weather in the bullpen there. That's what – if you wear green pants in there, you're going to disappear during the broadcast. So
– anyways.
Moving on. Starling Marte was a big topic of discussion of last week, and it's kind of quieted down a little bit with his performance last night. But last week was not Starling Marte's best week as a major leaguer.
Really?
Yes, I will go as far as to say that. In ranking the weeks of goodness from really, really good to really, really bad, this week prior would rank really, really bad. That's where, if we were doing a step on the scale, that's where that week would rank. Marte, the big thing wasn't his performance, which he was mired in an 0-for-23 slump prior to last night, and he was actually benched for 3 or 4 games. But the mental errors, the things that you can control in baseball, as we like to say, they were starting to wear thin with manager Clint Hurdle, to the point where when he was asked about it, you know, most of the time your managers are going to cover for your players. But Clint Hurdle actually came out last week, and this was according to Tom Singer at MLB.com. Hurdle stated that some of Marte's mistakes are young mistakes, but young mistakes have to end after a certain period of time. And that was him just kind of saying, like, hey, that was firing the what's the figure of speech there? What's your warning shot? You fire the
warning shot across the bow.
Across, yes, there you go. I think that was kind of Hurdle's warning shot. Some of his mistakes included, 2 Saturdays ago, he thought a batter took ball 4 while he was stealing second, just walked right into a caught stealing.
Whoops.
Literally walked into it. And then that last Tuesday, so a week ago from today, McCutcheon was calling him off on a fly ball. Marte, not listening, ran into him and knocked the ball out of Kutch's mitt.
Oops.
Then, so this was the culminating event of mental lapses. Friday night, he ended up, I forget exactly what the context was, but he ended up on second base. He got backpicked at second base. Just like, I don't even know what he was doing, like kicking around dirt, looking at ladybugs, I don't know. But he got backpicked at second base. And that was when even, like, I was getting kind of frustrated. So that was when Hurdle made the statement after that to say, like, hey, this stuff's got to stop. So I don't know. He came in after that mistake on Thursday. He came in to play center field Friday. The Pirates were just destroying the Brewers in the 15-5 route. And he came in to play center Friday. Fly ball kind of hit at him, but he took an awful angle to the ball that went over his head. You could just tell, like, he just didn't read it off the bat well. I mean, it was a rough, rough stretch for Starling Marte last week. I'm exhausted talking about it, Jason.
So let me ask you, because I heard at that time the Polanco noise was getting really loud.
Oh, we were greasing up the gears of the Polanco machine.
And people were saying, okay, you put Josh Harrison in left, and you get Polanco in right, and you send Marte back to Indianapolis. Do you think they were ever really considering that?
I don't think so. And Hurdle stated that he has faith in Starling Marte.
Oh, he stated, kiss of death.
Oh, but hang on. He stated that Marte needs to figure it out at the major league level. And, you know, basically he went through, which, you know, we talk about this all the time. When you're looking at at-bats and plate appearances of players in the minor leagues, you look at Starling Marte, and Hurdle reiterated he's never really had to struggle like this before because of his lack of minor league at-bats. And he's saying, you know, this is just kind of one of those bumps that he's going to have to go through. And in my head, basically what happened was what I thought would happen, which was Marte would get benched for a couple days. At some point, you know, they would filter him back into the lineup. And they would let him go from there and see what happens. And last night he got his first start after his couple game benching. And he ended up finishing, I think he went 3-for-4 last night. You know, that's not to say that he is, you know, like they fixed whatever his issues are. But that's to say, like, this kid has enough talent that we don't need to ship him back down to AAA. So that was Marte's week last week. Not great. No. But I would like to think maybe taking some strides forward. Maybe he's growing as a person, Jason. And really, isn't that what counts in life?
This isn't about life, though. This is about winning baseball games.
No, you're right. Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. Unless your life involves driving and runners.
Oh, it's not even about driving and runners.
It's just doing something productive.
It's just about, A, staying out of the way of other people.
Sharing. Sharing. And, that's what it's about.
B, taking a pitch every once in a while.
Which, that would be nice. Either A, taking a pitch, or B, not swinging at a pitch 6 inches off plate. That would be helpful. I need to go look, actually. I meant to jot that down in our notes. I forgot to write down his O swing and Z swing percentage. I'd be curious to go look at those and see where they are. Maybe I'll do that while you're talking.
I'm on the fan graphs to counter evidence as we speak, so I
can. Yeah. Go look at the O swing and Z swing percentage.
Keep talking. I'll find it.
Okay. So this kind of transitions smoothly into what's with Josh Harrison, because like you said, ooh, that was all the chatter, because Josh Harrison just tearing the cover off the ball. My stats were, when I put them actually in our notes, they aren't updated to today because he's actually hitting under 300 right now, but you know, Josh Harrison hitting close to 300, on base percentage of like right around 340, slugging like right around 500. Just Josh Harrison just killing the ball right now. His OPS plus is around 130. I mean, that's fantastic. And he's a positive defensive contributor, according to most metrics. And that's with him bouncing all around the diamond.
Yeah.
Speak of the devil, by the way, Marte's up right now, so I'll probably be watching this at bat out of the corner of my eye. He's 1-for-3 tonight with a double. But, yeah, so, I mean, that kind of posed the question, well, what do we do with Josh Harrison? And fortunately I shouldn't say fortunately, because it's not fortunate, but that issue resolved itself for the time being. With Neil Walker's disabled list stint, which we will get to in a moment. But before we get to talking to Neil Walker, there's a couple things I got to get off my chest, Jason.
Okay. Starling Marte's O swing percentage is about 34%, and his Z swing is about 63%.
And where's that at relative to last season?
His O swing percentage is actually down 3%. And his Z-swing is up 1%.
Interesting. Nothing there. Nothing really crazy.
No, I was actually pulling up McCutcheon just to see, you know, what a real player looks like.
Next, I'd like to look at. I probably want to go dig, and I'll do some digging on Marte later on. But I would take a look at some pitches per plate appearance. I'll probably be writing an article about Marte this week now that my job is wrapping up. I'm in the off season of teaching, if you will, coming up tomorrow. So I'll have some time to finally dig around and do some more writing because I've been slacking on the contributions.
So have I.
I need to start carrying my weight around here.
Maybe that's why only 14 people listen.
Yeah, we need more listeners.
Anyway.
But so, yeah, the Pirates lost a one hitter.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Because, hitter. Oh.
You know how I always give you the Tom Hamilton update on the Pirates?
Yeah, what Tom Hamilton have to say about this?
He was going through the scores, and he's like, well, the Pirates slide continues. They gave up one hit to the Padres and lost.
Did we get the Harry Doyle? The Pirates gave up one hit to the Padres tonight. One hit?
Yeah, it was pretty much, he's like, one hit to the Padres.
And they lost. Oh, Marte just beat out an infield single.
Oh, so everything's right in the world.
We're all right in the world. He's 2 for 4 tonight. That's 5 for 8 over the last 2 days if you're keeping track at home.
I'd like to point out that McCutcheon's Z-swing is in the low 70s and his O-swing is 28%.
So is that about 6% difference or so?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Significant.
Yeah. Yeah, enough you notice.
Well, you know.
So, they lose the one hitter. Do you know what this the one hit was? I think you actually just said it a minute ago, how they got their one hit, the Padres.
Oh, I did at the time. I don't remember now. Tell us.
It was the Padres earned their one hit on a bunt single.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew that.
And here's something that you may not have known.
I'm pretty sure Tom Hamilton made that clear as well.
The first ball did not make it to the outfield until, I want to say, the 7th or 8th inning. On a fly ball to McCutcheon.
That's good.
That was the first time a ball made it to the outfield. And we lost that game. Oh, it just pained my insides, Jason. I literally went to bed like someone had punched me in the stomach, like I'd been sucker punched. It was one of the most miserable experiences I've had watching baseball.
Who was pitching that game?
Liriano. Oh, Marte just got doubled off. Oh, I could expect the text messages to start rolling in now.
You couldn't ask for a more appropriate move by Starling Marte.
It was supposed to be a hit and run, and then
the prosecution rests.
Darwin Barney did a great job of just faking him out, making him think that a throw was coming. And so Marte like slid and looked around. It turned out it was an infield pop-up, not a throw coming. And so Marte had no idea what was happening, and then he got picked off at first. Now I'm all flustered because I'm talking about a one hitter that we surrendered and lost. Marte gets doubled off. But as if a gift sent from the gods, Jason. So we finished up a series on the West Coast, had a travel day, get back to Pittsburgh. On Friday, we're taking on the Brewers, who we have not, if you're following the Pirates. The Pirates have not been playing well against the Brewers.
1974.
Ever. And Friday night, so I'm just expecting just an awful, miserable game to sit through because I'm really pessimistic after that. Surrendering a one-hitter and losing. The Pirates came out Friday and just thumped the Brewers.
Yeah.
15-5. Just came out and played like someone had lit their cleats on fire. It was great to see. So Saturday, you go into Saturday against the Brewers. You're feeling really good against the Brewers. You know, we just, we got these guys. We thumped them. Saturday, we turned around and lost 9-3.
That happens.
Baseball, man, it makes no sense. You lose a one hitter. You beat the team that's been just destroying you all season long, 15-5. Then you turn around and lose the next one, 9-3. Just toying with your emotions. But I will say, Pittsburgh over the last month has really been gaining ground. And a large part of that has been because of their offensive production over the last month, which, again, if you've been listening to us for the last year or so, offensive production has not been great in Pittsburgh at all. So over the last month, Pittsburgh's OPS Plus, which sat at 97, I think, the last time that we were chit-chatting, their OPS Plus is up to 101. So their team OPS Plus is back above league average, which has them all the way up to the 10th best in the league. So adjusting for every different factor that you can adjust for with these advanced statistics, you know, Pittsburgh's starting to produce offensively. When you look at their statistics for the last month, they have the best average in baseball in May. So they hit .276 as a team in May. They had the best OBP in May at .347. And they had the 13th best slugging in baseball at .401. So it was a quietly productive month. Not a lot of people talking about it, but Pittsburgh had a very productive last month.
And now the savior has arisen.
And, yeah, now things are getting better. We're still not there yet in our narrative of how the week's gone, though, Jason.
Oh,
we're still not there. Oh, you just wait.
Sorry.
Because there's more to this narrative. Prior to our big day today, P day, as I like to call it, P day for Polanco.
Oh, I know what happened.
Gerrit Cole was originally okay, so he gets bumped back in the rotation. They say, so they call up Jeff Locke to make a start. Which he had a great start, by the way. Fantastic start.
Just wait till September.
Yeah, you've seen that live and in person, haven't you?
I paid good money to watch that.
Oh, you should have just lit that money on fire. you could have composted that money and probably got more out of it.
As he nibbled facing Bronson Arroyo. I mean, Bronson Arroyo was hitting at that point.
Right, yeah. Not as in they're squaring off against one another, both trying to nibble, as in he's trying to nibble against Bronson Arroyo, who is hitting in the box.
Yes, right.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to come too hard at Bronson Arroyo.
In his defense, there were runners all over the bases, so he really didn't want to give RBIs to Bronson Arroyo.
Didn't want to give up a grand slam.
Yeah. Continue.
Gerrit Cole placed on the DL Sunday with shoulder fatigue. Now, apparently they wanted to try and avoid a disabled list stint, but there was some of that just vague front office talk where they're like, well, we think it's in the best interest just to give him the whatever, 15 days. So Gerrit Cole placed on the 15-day DL with shoulder fatigue, which you never like to see. Although I didn't really notice didn't seem to be a decline in his velocity or anything.
Right. And he threw already. He threw three
right.
pitches today or yesterday.
Yeah. So, I mean, they said he's going to be right back on track to, like, as soon as his 15 days is up, he's going to be ready to go. So, I mean, this might even be a case where maybe they don't even send him on a rehab stint.
Here's the hoping.
What's that?
Here's the hoping.
Yeah, exactly. Because our pitching has been brutal.
Yep, and old Frankie got hurt today.
Yep. Oh, we're getting to there, too. So then, after Gerrit Cole placed on the DL, Major League Baseball held their annual first-year player draft. In the first round, Pittsburgh took Cole Tucker, 24th overall. He was a shortstop.
And they kind of got a little flack for that.
They really did, yeah. He was viewed, I guess, by a lot of people in the industry as a not top 25 talent or whatever.
I mean, on MLB Network, man, like, as soon as they came off the pick, they were like, this is a guy ranked in the 50s.
Which is kind of ridiculous because Peter Gammons actually tweeted it out today that if Pittsburgh hadn't taken Tucker there, because that was the thing, Pittsburgh wanted him as a shortstop in their system. They had the 39th pick, and people are like, why didn't you just wait till the 39th pick? Well, it turns out that whoever was picking after Pittsburgh was planning on taking him with their pick next at 25 if he didn't, you know, if Pittsburgh didn't take him there. So, and part of me, like, I'm not frustrated by the pick at all. And Neil Huntington kind of reiterated the sentiment of what I think you need to feel as a front office, which is basically Tucker was the best player available on their board.
Right.
And they knew, the Pittsburgh knew from, you know, talking to whoever or whatever information they collected, they knew Tucker wasn't going to make it to their 39th overall pick. So Neil Huntington came out and just gave the best drop the mic ever by saying, with all due respect to the experts, these are young men that we are betting on. Their characteristic, their work ethic, as well as what you can see with your eyes. So basically he's saying, we understand some of you may think he's not top 24 talent,
right,
but you know, there's more to it than that. And I kind of, I buy into that. I firmly believe that if you know, Houston did this in the Carlos Correa draft because they, you know, Correa wasn't viewed as the premier number one overall player in the draft, but Houston went with him because they knew he was going to be a safe player, and they knew that maybe they could save a little money on the front end that they could spread around later on.
Yeah, and I think that's fine if you spread the money around later on and approach it from the right direction. I think that it is a dangerous game to rely so much on positional need. Like, you can end up taking a player that is very much below your value slot if you're drafting, you know, if you're so focused on we have to get a shortstop or we have to get a catcher. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you end up forsaking like 20 picks worth of value because you are focused on one weakness. Now, if again, you come in under slot, you get the guy you want, and then you take that money and use it wisely to, you know, reach for a college or reach for a prep player later, then that can still work out. It's just, it is kind of a dangerous game, but if played correctly, you know, then it's not really a problem.
Well, and here is the other thing too. I mean, you know, everybody's going to need a shortstop. If he's the best player available on your board, I don't really think you're taking that much of a risk. I mean, if you know that number one, your organization needs a shortstop, and you know that the best shortstop on the board is there for us right now, I don't think it's that much of a, I don't think you're doing your organization a disservice to draft him there if there's, let's say, maybe a pitcher that ranks, you know, higher as a projectable player or whatever. You know, we all can look at the numbers and you can see how many of these players don't work out,
right?
You know, whichever way. So, I don't know.
I think it's just the danger. It always makes you wonder in your mind, though, when, you know, of course the team's going to come out and say, this is the best player on our board. And you want to say to yourself, you know, it's nice to know that the next team was going to take him. Because otherwise you're like, well, he was the best player on your board because everybody else had him in the fifth. You know what I mean?
That's, right, yeah.
That makes you a little nervous. But again,
yeah,
if you know that the team after you or a couple picks after you was going to take him, that eases your feeling toward the move a lot, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, again, it didn't make me feel any better hearing that, because I trust what the front office is doing at this point. And they have a plan. And, you know, the draft really is a crapshoot. You know, all these players are talented, and they all have, you know, they all have skills that could translate into major league talent.
Right.
You know, it's just, you know, for whatever reason, some players develop quicker and better and into better players than others. And it's, you know, it really is an art, not a science. So, yeah, that was the draft, which brings us to our hot topic for today, Jason.
Talk about burying the lead.
Our hot topic for today, Neil Walker's appendix. Do you know why Neil Walker's appendix is such a hot topic, Jason?
Because the fact that he had to get it out, they finally had a place to put Josh Harrison that wasn't in Gregory Polanco's spot. You're breaking up a little. Why don't you say that again?
We had call a player with appendix, and the player who had an appendix, which we called up, happened to be a player of note. A significant player.
Yes, you needed an appendixed player.
An appendixed player, and he has a fairly recognizable name around Pittsburgh. That name, Jason, is Gregory Polanco.
Yes, sir.
So Gregory Polanco, in the midst of making his debut as we're recording, he right now he's currently 1-for-3. Last inning, he actually just kind of duffed a ball off his mitt, and Pittsburgh's down 7-3 right now, so this game's looking kind of like a wash.
1-for-3? Isn't he the savior?
He is, yeah. Did you expect him to go like 5-for-5? With 9 RBI and 3 home runs or something?
Well, I mean, really, I expected that he was going to, you know, hit 20 home runs, steal 20 bases, you know, play winger with Crosby.
I was hoping, personally, that he could pitch every day.
1,000-yard receiver for Ben. Yeah, he was going to, you know, step in to the rotation until Cole came back.
That's really what we need.
He was going to fix the, you know, he's going to hire more police officers and lower the taxes. I thought he was just going to do everything. 1-for-3.
1-for-3 with a run.
Yeah, but he had a trot home. That was on a McCutcheon home run. He didn't even have to run.
Yeah, he didn't earn it. But great to see him up. Last half inning, he kind of duffed a ball off his mitt in right, which...
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I'm sure that's probably going to be... because part of his shtick is like he's supposedly a great defensive outfielder. So we'll get to see that replayed and dissected, I'm sure. He has been on camera literally half of this game, though. This is it's like the Gregory Polanco show.
Oh boy.
Sometimes I don't even know what the score is because I'm just busy gazing into his eyes.
All right, let me ask you a real question then.
All right.
Come back to reality for a minute.
Okay.
A serious Pirates fan said yes. To me yesterday when I told him that Gregory Polanco was being called up. He said, you know, I'm not even that excited because he turned down that contract. He doesn't even want to be here.
But honestly, that sounds like a Pirates fan, by the way.
But does that make you worry in the back of your head that he would he turned down a major league contract while in the minor leagues?
No. I don't think so. We have 6 years to control him either way. And again, I would like to again reiterate, this is why you have to keep him down in the first place. Because you need to keep that super two status on lockdown. You need to control him for as long as you can, as cheap as you can. And if it costs you, you know, 30 games at the beginning of his career, so be it. Because, yeah, maybe he's never going to take an extension in Pittsburgh. But I like Evan Longoria's mentality of contracts. And Evan Longoria's actually told players this in Tampa Bay, that Tampa Bay kind of is the model of those early on in your career, buying out some free agent years and arbitration year contracts. Eric Hinsky once told Evan Longoria, don't ever turn down your first $1 million.
Well, and listen,
what's that?
Polanco didn't heed that advice.
Yeah. Polanco didn't care. He's apparently betting on himself, but that was kind of the advice that Hinsky gave to Longoria. And if you're familiar with Eric Hinsky at all, he came up, I think he was the AL or NL Rookie of the Year. I think AL Rookie of the Year for Toronto. You know, looked like he was on track for a great major league career. And then he just kind of flamed out and never really became the caliber of player that people expected. And his whole thing that he was reiterating to Longoria was, hey, man, you don't know when that money's going to dry out.
Right.
If you get a chance to sign a contract that's going to get you paid, take it. So, I don't know. I mean, we're literally one day into Gregory Polanco's major league career, so I'm not going to fret about contract stuff till we're much further along down the line.
It would make me nervous, though. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to say it would make me not excited, but it would be in the back of my mind. I would be like, oh, boy, just wait.
Here's the thing, man. If you're not re-signing Polanco, you know, 4 years down the road or whatever, 5 years down the road, we're starting to hit like year two of arbitration. You're not getting Polanco locked up to a deal. The reason you're not getting Polanco locked up to a deal is either A, because he's played awfully and you're just not going to, you know, extend him, or B, he's played awesomely and now he's just priced himself out of Pittsburgh. Either of those two scenarios, all right, well, you're not spending money if he's playing, you know, if he's so horrible that you're not going to even, you know, offer him a contract extension. And if he's playing amazingly, you're going to do what all small market teams do, which is when you realize you're getting down to the last season and a half of his tenure in your organization, you trade him away for some prospects, you reload, and you do it again. And that's the way baseball, that's the way small market baseball especially works.
That's not going to make you happy in 4 years. You say that,
it might not be. Yeah, I mean, if we're still recording this podcast, I'll definitely be bald in 4 years, probably from this Pirates team. It's the way it is. I've come to grips with that after watching Tampa Bay and kind of understanding how you need to function as a small market team. I get how it works. It's a business. It's cool. I mean, I say that now because we're 6 years away from him becoming a free agent, but you know, whatever. So, yeah, I'm loving this Polanco hype. It's great. He got a standing ovation after he popped up to the shortstop tonight.
Johnny Manziel.
How long do you think that's going to last?
A few days.
When's the next time he pops up to the shortstop and gets a standing ovation? That's what I'd like to know. My guess is never, by the way, if I were betting on it.
I bet he gets standing over the next couple days, regardless. Yeah. He'll do enough. He'll, like, sprinkle in a double or something. People are like, see?
Just keep stringing us along.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to be it for Pittsburgh. We gotta keep this train a rolling because we got plenty of stuff to talk about in Cleveland, Jason. So what's been going on in Tribe Town the last 10 days?
Well, this team is what you would call, inconsistent. They go from, like, the verge of last place. I think the last time we talked, the Astros were catching them, and they were in, like, fourth place. Then they rattle off. They sweep the Rockies. They sweep the Red Sox. They split 2 out of 4 in Texas. Now, all of a sudden, they're in second place in the AL Central two games above 500. And the Tigers, if you haven't been paying attention, are in the tank. Like, they haven't been able to do anything. And I don't know, you know, I'm not saying that the Tigers' season is over, but the Tigers are one of those teams, and I've said this for years, all of a sudden you're going to look around and say, man, the Tigers are old. And I'm not saying it's happening right now, but they're definitely in free fall right now. They'll get it back together. You know, they'll put up a fight. I'm not saying the Indians are staking their claim to the American League Central right now, but they're definitely, it is a lot different than it was the last time we recorded because the Indians are right in the thick of it. I think they're one or one and a half games back or something like that. So this team, they've turned it around, and they turned it around while Nick Swisher and Carlos Santana were on the disabled list.
Well, and that's one of the things I wanted to ask you, too, about Cleveland, because of their great play and kind of thrusting themselves back in the central race there all of a sudden. I'm sorry, Gregory Polanco just grounded out, so I just lost my train of thought. But what's been the primary catalyst for their turnaround? You know, you got Swish on the DL. You have Santana who went on the DL for the concussion and all that jazz. Why has Cleveland been winning all these games all of a sudden?
Well, as Drubal Cabrera started, you got a couple of players that started hitting. Okay, so you got rid of the two automatic outs that were Swisher and Santana, and you replaced one with Kipnis, who, while he hasn't looked like the all-star Jason Kipnis, has been serviceable. But Cabrera started hitting, Brantley's hitting, Michael Bourne is just tearing the cover off of it, which is lovely. I mean, lovely to see Michael Bourne really contributing to this team. Who would have thought, right, that the player who everyone's worried is not going to live up to his contract all of a sudden is Nick Swisher, not Michael Bourne. Because Michael, you know, all the hamstring injuries, already kind of a light hitter, built on a player whose value is built around speed and defense, right? That's the guy that you're kind of worried about. You know, you're like, oh boy, I hope that contract pans out. Whereas Swisher, you know, he always hits 20 home runs. He always drives in 80. He always hits like 260. That was the guy you thought like, well, you know, yeah, we kind of had to overpay, but I think he's going to keep doing this. But Michael Bourne, all of a sudden, I mean, he's driving in runs. He's hitting homers. So Michael Bourne, Drubal Cabrera, those guys are hitting. And then the rotation has completely stabilized. And it's stabilized around a guy not named Justin Masterson. Now, Corey Kluber is having a rough go tonight. I think he's given up 4 runs to the Royals last time I looked. But he's the guy that's the ace of this staff right now. Trevor Bauer has looked really strong. TJ House last time was kind of a dud. But, you know, overall, he's filled in very well for Zach McAllister. And Josh Tomlin's just doing his little cowboy routine and keeping the team in the game. So all of a sudden, you have all these things that were, you know, what did I always say? They can't hit, they can't pitch, and they can't play defense. And their defense actually has been a lot better recently. So all three of those, I mean, that's why they've turned it around. It's not really a mystery. It's because they've actually started to play baseball like a real team again and not throw the ball in the stands and give up 5 runs in an inning. But there's one guy, Andy, that I know you want to talk about who's played a big part in their resurgence, and he kind of had a big night last night.
He had a huge night last night. He made last night's baseball viewing experience was 80 grade for me. 80 grade viewing experience last night.
Because of one Lonnie Chisenhall.
The Lawnmower Man.
I'm on his baseball reference page. The Lawnmower Man is not listed as a nickname.
Not yet. Is Chiswiz listed yet?
No, it actually just says Lonnie David Chisenhall.
That's it. No Lonnie Baseball?
No. No, the Chiz Kid, which I mean, Chiz Kid and Lonnie Baseball, those are definitely nicknames he's had prior to this event. It does list his Twitter handle at Big Lon 8.
Big Lon.
But anyways, so last night, Big Lon went 5 for 5. Scored 3 runs, hit 3 home runs, and drove in 9.
I don't know as if I've ever seen a line quite like that.
Well, you know, there's been similar lines in Indians history, but none quite like that. He's the only one to not record an out. Okay? So, like, I think it was like Craig Jones or someone in 1991 hit 3 home runs in a game and drove in maybe 9 or 8 runs, maybe. I can't remember. But
I've got some stats here. If you want me to chime in with them, let me know.
Go for it.
All right. So here's what we have. We have since 1914. There's only what, 1, 2, 3. So there's only 3 players with 5 hits, 3 home runs, 9 RBI in 1 game.
Right.
You have Fred Lynn in 1975. He was 5 for 6 with 3 home runs and 10 RBI. You have Gil Hodge in 1950. He was 5 for 6, 4 home runs and 9 RBI.
Oof.
And then Cincinnati's Walker Cooper. He went 6 for 7 with 3 home run and 10 RBI. So you're going way, way back. You have a whole lot of baseball history and some pretty rarefied air there for the Lawnmower Man.
Yeah. Well, he was asked by the Hall of Fame to give up his bat.
Did he?
Let's see here. They asked for the bat that he used, and yeah, he gave it up.
Good for him.
And he said, quote, "Sometimes you have to give up a piece that maybe means something to you to give it to the game. I'm all for it." And he said, "Walking through there just to have any piece of equipment that I own or use there is a huge honor, a huge accomplishment." So, Lonnie had one heck of a night. I mean, there's been Indians players that have gotten 5 hits and driven in 8 or 9 runs, or Indians players that have hit 4 home runs, you know, kind of like what you went through. But nobody has had that line where you don't make an out, you give up, or you drive in 9 and drive 4 or 3 home runs out. I mean, that was absurd.
That's pretty ridiculous.
There's no other word for it. And so that has taken Lonnie's season line, okay, to a .385 batting average with a .429 on base and a .615 slugging. So that's a 1.044 OPS. Or an OPS plus of 194 with 7 homers and 32 RBIs to go along with 16 doubles in just 51 games.
Now, wow.
Now, do I think that Lonnie Chisenhall is going to have an OPS over 1 for the whole season? No. But I think it does show that Lonnie Chisenhall, you know, it confirms what I've been saying, what Bob has been saying all these years we've been doing this. Lonnie Chisenhall has loads of talent. He has a beautiful swing. He's got good power. I mean, Bob and I always said, we said it 2 years ago, Lonnie Chisenhall is a 20 to 25 homer, 80 RBI guy who we said at the time could hit 260 or maybe 270. I really do think that's probably more, you know, the real range of his his skills.
His particular set of skills.
But man, is this fun to watch right now. And it's fun to watch because for 2 years I've been saying, just give Lonnie a chance. And you know who's responsible for Lonnie really making this team out of spring training?
I'm going to say Tito.
No.
No? No Tito?
He wasn't going to make this team until the Giambino broke his rib.
Oh!
That's the only reason, really, that Lonnie made the team out of spring training. And then, you know, Carlos struggled so much that they couldn't keep plugging Carlos in. And so they're letting, you know, giving Carlos days off, and they're trying to protect Lonnie by not letting him bat against lefties. And he just keeps hitting and hitting and hitting. And then they say, you know, Carlos, you're not really doing it. Let's try and play you at DH more. We'll let Lonnie play even against lefties. And he keeps hitting and hitting. And then he has this night like last night where he just goes off the rails, man.
And again, yeah, like why? I don't even know where that comes from. I mean, it's like a video game line.
It is a video game line. I mean, it's crazy. You know, he's still maybe not taking as many walks as you'd like to see, but he is staying on the ball against lefties, you know, and just feeling content to dump it the other way and not go for the big blow. On the year against lefty, he's only had 28 plate appearances, but he's hitting .520. So it's like, you know, you can't use that as an excuse anymore if you're Terry Francona. I mean, yeah, he's probably not going to hit .520 against lefties his whole career. But you don't take someone who's performing that well and say, oh, no, we view him more as a platoon guy.
Right.
So it's kind of interesting what they're going to do now. Because as somebody said on Twitter last night, I think Lonnie Chisenhall just won the everyday third base job. So, you know, yeah, for now you can play Carlos Santana at first. But Nick Swisher, you know, got some at-bats tonight in a rehab game. He's going to come back at some point. I mean, you know, I think the real answer there is, well, you have this, like, kind of three-headed monster between third, first, and DH that includes Swisher, Chisenhall, and Santana. And you keep playing Lonnie until he starts to go cold, because this isn't the kind of guy you sit down right now.
Right. No, not after the old 5-for-5 game.
I mean, and when you look at it, that game was 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That made a 7-game hitting streak for Chisenhall. So this isn't like, you know, out of the blue, like he's been 0 for his last 20 and then explodes. But it was fun to see, man. You said it yourself, his swing looked gorgeous.
Oh, it looked gorgeous last night. Oh, yeah. it did look perfect.
And that you know, obviously it's going to look gorgeous. He's tuned in. I'm pretty sure it didn't matter what anybody threw him last night. He was going to hit it out.
But, right.
That was fun. There's no doubt about it.
It was a spectacle to behold.
It was. It was a historic night, as evidenced by the Hall of Fame asking for that bat. So that was good to see. Now back to, you know, where the Indians are in the whole season. Like I said, they're improving. They're over .500. They've made a lot of gains on the Tigers. Zach McAllister is making rehab appearances. Swisher's making rehab appearances. Kipnis is back. Santana's back. And Santana's looking, you know, he's looking all right. So that's all good to see. And, like, this is an inconsistent team. I don't think that that's going to change. They were inconsistent last year, and I think they're going to be inconsistent this year. So it's kind of one of those, like, don't get too low in the lows and try not to get too highs on the highs.
Right, yeah.
I did want to talk about the draft for a little bit because, as we said earlier, that happened last Thursday. The Indians had 4 picks in the first 2 rounds, and they used them apparently pretty well because Keith Law said that of any team's haul on that first day, the Indians group of players was his, quote, favorite. He said it was a nice mix of ceiling and floor along with, you know, college and prep, which I think that's good. You know, when you get 4 picks in the first 2 rounds, you want to take some shots, but you want to make sure you get something, right?
Yeah.
So, in the first pick, I actually really, really love their first pick. It was Bradley Zimmer, an outfielder from the University of San Francisco. Find his little capsule here. He's kind of a compact guy. Where did it go? I lost him. I was actually compact guy is Justice Sheffield, who is their next pick. Let's find Bradley. If you're an Indians fan and you hate the fact that they have had a weak outfield for years, Bradley Zimmer is like the answer to all your prayers. He's a college outfielder, so he's a more advanced player whose bat is his best tool. So what's not to like about that, right?
Yeah.
At the University of San Francisco, he hit .368 this year with 7 homers and 31 RBIs while stealing 21 bases. He's not a compact guy. He's 6'5". So he could make a center fielder, but he has a very strong arm and, like I said, a plus bat, so he could fit into a corner really well. The interesting thing about him is his brother is Kyle Zimmer, who was the number 5 pick for the Royals in 2012. So there's a little bloodline there.
All right.
And it's funny because the Indians, they had a lot of players with bloodlines, which is kind of interesting, I think. Because for their next pick, which was their pick for compensation for losing Ubaldo Jimenez, they signed drafted left-hander Justice Sheffield, who's the nephew of Gary Sheffield.
Ooh.
Now, of course, this is just high school, but Sheffield this year went 10-0 with a .34 ERA, where he had 131 strikeouts in 61 innings and was Gatorade Player of the Year. So, you know, that's an interesting pick. And I actually didn't misspeak earlier when I said that Sheffield signed, because there's rumors that Sheffield did, in fact, already sign to an underslot contract. So that would be a bonus for the Indians. And then the next one, they took Mike Pappy, who's a outfield/first baseman from the University of Virginia, who has had a really nice offensive season there. And then their last pick that day, they took another left-handed high schooler. I lost him again. My computer is failing me. Right-handed high schooler Grant Hawken, who did sign today. So it was an interesting group of players. I have a whole list of why it's interesting if you want to hear them.
Do we have time? How are we doing with time?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's quick.
We're going off the rails. Let's do it.
This is courtesy of a really nice blog, Let's Go Tribe. So I'll give them credit because they put this together. just some interesting things. All in all, they took 15 high school players and 27 college players, 19 pitchers and 23 position players, which I think is about what I predicted, because they've been loading up on pitchers the last couple of years, so they kind of skewed back the other way. They took Juan Gomes,
Jan's, isn't it Jan's little brother, right?
Yeah, Jan's little brother. And the guys at Let's Go Tribe wonder if drafting Juan was part of the contract extension that Jan signed. but I do think it's funny that their names are Juan and Jan.
Juan and Jan, yeah.
I mean, it's about as close as you can get. They also took two players named with the last name of Carter, Jordan and Jod Carter. How do you like that name, Jod Carter?
Jod.
The guys at Let's Go Tribe wonder if they are related to any of the following: Gary, Joe, Ruben, Vince, Chris, Linda, Nell, Sean, Jimmy, or Billy Carter. Now, here's the real good one, okay? They took Peter Dolan. Does that name sound familiar to you? Dolan?
Peter Nolan?
Dolan.
Dolan, like
the guy who owns the Indians.
Yeah, like is related to?
Yeah, that's his son.
Is it really?
Yeah, they took Paul Dolan, or they took Peter Dolan, who is Paul Dolan, owner of the Indians' son. He's a third baseman from Gilmore Academy in Ohio. So, as if that's not funny enough, and this is the whole reason I'm reading these. Because you know how I always say the Dolans are cheap?
Right.
And that's the thing, you know, it's all over the Plain Dealers website and everything. So the guys at Let's Go Tribe say, in all caps with bad grammar, the Dolans are probably too cheap to sign him.
That's pretty funny.
I mean, that's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say other than they drafted the owner's son. I mean, 2 years ago, they drafted Tom Hamilton's son.
Yeah, just a little nepotism.
Nick Hamilton's still in their system, so, I mean, that's worth something, I guess, right?
Yeah, I guess.
He wasn't just, I mean, he's okay. He's not a good, top prospect or anything, but. I want to learn more about Peter Dolan.
Yeah, maybe we'll do some research on him before the next podcast.
Yeah. So, anyways, that's kind of where we're at in Cleveland.
And that's it, huh?
Yep.
Lonnie's big night. That's what fueled me through the day today, just thinking about Lonnie's night yesterday. It was pretty awesome to see. So, can we move on to Step on the Scale?
Oh.
Can we step on the scale? I think we're gonna leapfrog the Seawolf shout out for time purposes.
Oh, I just want to say that Jeff Ellis, who's a great Indians draft guru, says that Peter Dolan, he almost will guarantee that he won't sign. Because he said he's heading to Michigan.
Oh, all right.
But anyways, he does say that while it's not unheard of to draft the son of people with ties to an organization, Dolan actually has a higher profile than many of these players often have.
Yeah.
So anyways, step on the scale. Yeah, let's do it.
So what do we want our scale to be today?
It's up to you. You're going to go first. I have a list of questions for you.
All right, let's do a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the best and 1 being the worst.
All right. Well, no, actually, let's do it this way. I'm gonna take that back, because these questions all kind of go around chances.
Chances, okay.
Let's do a percentage scale.
Okay, a percentage scale, 0 to 100?
Sure.
Okay, 100 being a guarantee, a certainty, and 0 being a non-chance.
Right. Chances Starling Marte returns to the minors ever in his career?
I'm assuming you mean other than like on a rehab. You mean like for performance.
Right. Is demoted.
Is demoted. Is shipped back down to Indianapolis. I will say 5%.
Five. Woo. Chances yes. that Gregory Polanco is demoted to the minors.
I'm going to go a little higher. I'm going to say 15%.
Which we should say, you know, it's not, there's plenty of really good players that have.
Who've gone back and forth, yes.
Have gone back and forth a couple times.
I think Polanco's here to stay.
Yeah, okay, they're right. You're on the record for that. Chances Jay Hay, Josh Harrison, remains in the starting lineup the rest of the season.
Oh!
Now, what this would have to mean, right, that either someone suffers a serious injury and can't continue, or, I mean, he can play all over, but...
That's what I think is going to end up happening. So, I mean, if we're talking about just a starting position in one spot, I'm going to say maybe a 5% chance just based on that injury risk, maybe. I think what more than likely the scenario happens is he's just a super utility player.
So you think he'll play more than 115 games?
Yes.
But just all?
Yes, I do. Just everywhere, yes.
Chances that Travis Snyder is apartment shopping before the end of June.
Oh, 98%.
Notice I didn't say where.
Right.
Just could be somewhere. In Indianapolis, could be in Miami, I don't know. And the final one, chances that Vance Worley pitches in the Pirates rotation before the end of the year.
Oh, good Lord. I hope that that's 0%. I'm going to say 20%.
I think
maybe in like some kind of weird mop-up role.
Well, so if Liriano, Cole's already on the DL, hopefully it's short, but Locke's already up. So if Liriano has to go on the DL, who are they calling?
If Liriano has to go on the DL for his side tonight, who are they calling? Well, I mean, you have...
Are you going to go, like, with Compton or something?
Well, yeah, you have Stolmy Pimentel, who's rehabbing, who Pittsburgh really, really likes. You know, they liked enough that they kept Pimentel over Mazzaro at the beginning of the season.
Right.
For that bullpen spot. I mean, I think you start slotting Compton in there. I think you start slotting, you know, if Pimentel comes back and is healthy, you know, you stretch him out a little bit. Yeah, that's what I think you would probably do. I think you'd have to dig really, really deep before you start getting to Vance Worley.
Well, part of the problem we should add is that Vance Worley's not on the 40-man.
No, he is not on the 40-man.
So that's all he's going to.
I mean, you have guys like, you know, you probably go to Duke Welker. You know, Welker's on the 40-man. I think he's currently on the 7-day DL down there.
I don't know, Andy. You're not giving many healthy options.
Yeah, boy. Actually, I started thinking about it, and I'm like, it really isn't too far to Vance Worley from here.
I mean, if these guys that you were naming were healthy,
yeah,
that'd be one thing, but... All right, well, that's all I got. I can't go any lower than Vance Worley.
Oh, jeez, boy, yeah. Yeah. I started thinking about that. I'm like, oh, boy, who do we start starting there? That's a little nerve-wracking. That was a fun round. I like that. Good work. All right, you ready to step on the scale?
Sure.
This one's going to be a little bit shorter. I only have a couple for you here. But I, in my defense, I did have quite a few for you last week.
True. What All right. scale am I on?
What do you want to be on?
Well, you're asking the questions. I think it should be chosen by the questioner.
See, I like for the answerer to choose. But if you want, I'll give you the scale. How about Let's go one star to four stars.
Okay.
Four star being the best, one star being the worst.
Okay.
All right. Step on this scale. The Chiz Wiz's season so far.
Uh-huh. Four stars.
Four star season for you.
Yeah. I mean,
could he? Can you go above four stars? Is that what you're going to ask?
Well, I was going to say, well, if you're him, how can you not be happy with this right now? You're batting 380, and the Hall of Fame asked for your bat.
Yeah, well, that's pretty good. That's a good day.
I think he said in that article that I was looking at about the Hall of Fame, he was basically saying, like, you know, before I was just hoping I'd be able to convince my kids that I actually played. Now there'll be something of mine there.
That's pretty good. I like that. Okay, so we got four stars.
You know, order my Chisball jersey.
Oh yeah, yeah. We got to get a Chiz jersey. All right. How about this? I'm kind of curious to hear this. The catching situation in Cleveland.
That just rated in stars.
Yep, rated in stars.
I'm going to give it. I'm actually going to give it three stars.
Ooh, three out of four, huh?
Reason being that Gomes, I believe, hasn't made an error since like the second week of May, and he's hitting, and Carlos Santana, you know, I mean, he knows how to play catcher in a pinch. And I'm going to give it three stars because right now on the roster, George Kateris is on there. And he is proving to be quite valuable.
Let me ask you this. Is it safe to say that with Kateris on the roster, Carlos Santana's days as a catcher are effectively over?
As long as he remains on the roster, I would say yes. But the problem is that you have to make a move for Nick Swisher. I would say it should be Jason Giambi because Kateris is more valuable to me than Giambi. But he has the people at the corner of Carnegie in Ontario that wear polo shirts under his spell. I don't know. I mean, if it's just Santana and Gomes, I might go back to two stars, 2.5 stars. But with Kateris, it's three.
Okay. Kateris bumps it up to three.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Here's our last one. Step on the scale and rate the Cleveland Indians bullpen this season.
Oh, well, the problem is you have one group that's really good but really overworked. And then you have one group that, like, every time one of them comes in, Twitter explodes in a, hey, it's a Carlos Carrasco sighting. Or, hey, it's a John Axford sighting. I've never seen an 8-man bullpen where three of them are used so little. But I guess I would give it, because of that, I'm going to give it two stars. Because the back end of that bullpen is really overworked right now. And it doesn't make sense to me. I wish they would, you know, if they're not going to use Carrasco or Axford, get them out of there and get, you know, CeCe Lee and Kyle Crockett up here, where somebody you can trust. John Axford has an option. So if he stinks, there might not be a whole lot he can say about it. Luckily for him, he's actually been pitching okay lately.
Okay. All right. So we're at two stars for the bullpen.
Because it's overworked. And it's an oxymoron because it's an overworked 8-man bullpen.
Okay. All right. An overworked 8-man bullpen. That doesn't need to be overworked. That's the crux of your thing.
Yeah.
All right.
They have plenty of guys. We've gone through the names before. Plenty of guys in AAA who are serviceable, if not
right.
That. But they, you know, because it's a business, they have to play out their hand with Carrasco and Axford.
Okay. All right. I like it. Ooh, that was fun. I like that. That's a fun game. I enjoy that.
There you go. That's fastest game in showbiz right there.
step on the scale. That's fast for us too, because we like to beat around the proverbial bush there. On that note, that's gonna wrap us up, Jason. That's it. We're done. So we'd like to thank our listeners and ask, if you're listening to us on iTunes, that you give us a rate and review. We'll be recording sometime next week-ish, so keep your ears to the ground for that. I will be posting more content on the website, as I'm sure we all will be, as the dog days of summer are getting ready to approach. So if you want to check us out on the web, you can do so at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can send us an email, tristatevb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter at tristatevb. And you can check us out at Facebook at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. So for Jason Ruggiero, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you soon. You want to shout out?